Down to cats.
Good morning, Commissioners and Secretary Hepler. Tom Kirschman, Deputy Director of the Wildlife Division. Next on your agenda, number 19, is the bobcat trapping and hunting season and an information item related to bobcat harvest and a little bit of update on some of the projects and research we have going on with bobcats. Today we have Chad Lehman, our senior biologist from out at Custer State Park, that works very close with bighorn sheep, mountain goats, and bobcats in particular. So before we get into the actual action sheet, Chad's going to take a few moments and give you a little bit of update on bobcats and some of the work that we're doing, and then we'll have a brief discussion on the action sheet itself. So with that, I'll turn it over to Chad.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Commission, Secretary Hepler, Chad Lehman, Senior Wildlife Biologist, and we're going to provide you an update on the management and research of bobcats here for the state of South Dakota. Okay, bobcats are listed in the Appendix 2 of CITES. And so they are a species of concern with the Fish and Wildlife Service. Therefore, accordingly, state agencies are required to document that harvest is not detrimental to that species. Therefore, we provide an annual harvest report to the Fish and Wildlife Service regarding harvest of bobcats annually. So for harvest data collection, folks are required within 5 days of harvest or within 24 hours of season closure to present the pelt and skin carcass to personnel for CITES tagging. We then take the lower jaw and use that to determine age and gender of those animals as part of our harvest process data collection. And for this past trapping season, we had a 52-day season for everything west of the Missouri River and a 27-day season for East River. This year harvest was up. We harvested just over 460 bobcats this year compared to 218 last year. The percent of juveniles harvested was 11%, which was down considerably from 24% the previous year. And the male to female ratio was 1.2, which was exactly the same as last year. And we did see a slight increase in fur prices, just over $243 last year compared to just over $270 this year. And then this figure here shows the long-term trend data for harvest prices and then fur prices and then the individuals of hunting and trapping. And you can see over time here, there's been a lot of variability in all of those different metrics. The one thing I will point out here that is important to note is the high correlation among these three metrics. You'll see that harvest is obviously very correlated with fur prices, and then the number of, we typically see more individuals out there hunting and trapping as fur prices increase. So as fur prices continue to increase, obviously that could be a huge factor, obviously in the harvest of bobcats in the state. You know, the number of individuals this year was 215, which is comparable to what we saw in 2011 and 13 when we did see a lot more harvest on bobcats in the state. We're also, the last several years now, we've been collecting effort data, which is important because we can potentially use that information in another abundance estimation technique down the road. And what we have here is the number of days, average number of days for trapping, and then the number of traps, average number of traps used by folks. And we did see a slight increase this year compared with last year. The increase was roughly 14 days and 24 traps compared to 12 days and 17 traps last year. We've also done research on bobcats across the state. We finished up a project out on West River Prairie around Union Center area. Back from 2013 to 16, we had a master's student on that project, and we've shared that data with you in the past. And if you recall, the survival rates were between 65% and 75%, which indicates to us that that population probably is not being exploited. Typically, the magic threshold there for bobcat survival is 60%. If you get in and around there or below, that could be a concern for us as far as annual survival for adult bobcats. One thing I will note, though, that during that study, we did not have a lot of individuals trapping at that period of time compared to what we're seeing even the last couple of years. And then we also started a research study in the Black Hills where we're trying to radio collar bobcats. And we do have a first year of annual survival data based on 24 bobcats. We were able to pool male and female survival rates. And our survival rate was right at 70% for this first year of study. It's interesting that that's really similar to what we have for West River. A cautionary note here, though, however, you'll see our confidence intervals are fairly wide there at 45 to 87%. So I think, you know, our precision isn't there yet because we don't have the sample sizes, and we're going to continue to work towards that. So we're going to continue to capture and monitor adult radiomarked cats in the Black Hills. It's exciting to bring you the news that we are going to have a kitten survival study as well in the Black Hills that's going to be funded. We're going to bring in a master's student starting next winter, where we're also going to try and radio collar kittens to get information on that age class. And what that will do is provide us much more information on things like growth rates and survival rates for that age class. So that's good news. So for recommendation, at this time, we bring no recommended changes to the season structure for the next 2 years. And I'll try and answer any questions on that.
Questions from Chad. Okay, Russ.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Olson. What's the loss rate or mortality rate of tagged animals? Like if you put a collar on one, I mean, it's whether they're snagged on a fence or if they get caught in a tree or anything like that, what's the mortality rate on those?
Yeah, so far we have not seen any unusual losses like that on fences or collars. These collars are pretty, on the adults, are pretty tough, and we don't see any unusual losses like that. So they've been holding up really well for us so far. The trick is getting the collar on the cat. You know, these animals are very elusive. They're difficult to catch, so getting the sample sizes is really the hurdle we're trying to get over.
Commissioner Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Phillips. In the requirements and restrictions, the carcass has to be turned in and the lower jaw is removed. I've had at least two individuals call me and ask me why, you know, it's quite a species. It's an iconic species. Somebody gets a big tom, they want the hide and the skull, you know, for the trophy case. Why do we need to remove the lower jaw before returning the carcass to the hunter?
Chairman, Commissioner Phillips, that's a great question, and we get asked that a lot. And the main reason is the lower jaw is necessary for the root opening that we inspect to get the age off that animal, whether or not it's a juvenile or an adult. And so if they would want the upper portion of the skull back, we certainly can accommodate that. But we need the DNA off of the skull, the lower jaw, for purposes of getting the gender of the animal, and then the teeth for the getting the juvenile versus adult aging.
Is there any other way that can be accomplished?
Not really. That's the primary way. We have to extract that lower canine to get the age of the animal. And of course, the DNA we could collect from other areas of the carcass, but that's really what we need, that lower jaw for the age data.
They normally have a couple kittens, or
So, Mr. Chairman, this species can be highly variable. Typically, the average is around 3 kittens, but they can have anywhere from, you know, obviously 1 to 6 in the literature. So that's of interest to us to see how many kittens, obviously, they're going to have in the Black Hills as well. That's an important metric to know.
Yeah, it's amazing that you've got 24, I think. Probably my lifetime, I've only seen actually a half a dozen or so out there, and I know they're around, and they're very elusive, so. Yes.
Commissioner Olson here. You said that you have a master's student that's going to be funded to carry out that kitten study. Where does the funding come from?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Olson, that's another great question. We are actually being funded through our Pittman Robinson funding through the department's administration, obviously through that. So, it's hunting and fishing dollars are going to fund it. So that's exciting.
With the increase in numbers, is that an indication that numbers are up, do you think, or?
You know, if you look at our long-term trend data, harvest is very correlated with fur prices and individuals. So I think we need to be very careful in looking at the harvest and determining whether or not abundance is correlated with that. I think we need to have an independent estimate of abundance that's reliable for us.
Okay. Anything else? Is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Moved and seconded that we approve the proposal. All in favor would say aye.
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 And any opposed? Okay, it is approved. Thank you. Okay. We are.